Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 14 of Tim's Travails. This month, we interview wine industry expert Elise Coudeau, who is the vice president of the Spire Collection by Jackson Family Wines. And I cannot wait to learn about the wine industry, the state of it. So many people stop drinking, but of course, there are still many of us who do. And good wine is the reason, you know, that it keeps me alive personally. But Tim is an amazing author and attorney, IP attorney, and his show, Tim's Travails, brings in fascinating people, and he has these wonderful conversations. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, proud producer of the show on Incandescent Radio and Incandescent TV. We're also out there on Spotify, iHeart, and Apple Podcasts. So today we meet amazing Elise Coudeau. Take it away, Tim.
Thank you, Hope. And Elise, great to see you. And thank you very much for being on today.
Thank you, Tim. Always wonderful to see you as well.
And I do know that you're still maybe getting over jet lag since you are in a really wonderful wine area in Bordeaux. So and just tell me for a moment how that trip was.
The trip was absolutely amazing. I had the great opportunity to be with Nicolas Séan, who's our incredible vigneron at the estate, and host the International Wine and Food Society as they made a sojourn to Paris and Bordeaux. Not too bad, but a very savvy group, and they really appreciated what's happening at the now Grand Cru Classé estate.
Well, I'm going to take us back hopefully a little bit because one of the things I know about people just generally is we all, including myself, sometimes we fall into a career that we didn't really expect, let's say. So the question I have for you is you've been in the wine industry for a long time, but was that a conscious decision or an accidental one that just happened?
I think it was kind of an evolution. I was very fortunate because my parents always had wine with dinner, and it started off with Matus, then it graduated to Lancers, and then the epiphany ensued, and that was with Nuit Saint-Georges. So at a very young age, the palate was honed, and I always loved to cook. And I think I knew from the onset, without really realizing it, that the synergy of great food and great wine that pairs beautifully turns that meal to a dining experience. And my whole life is centered around that mantra. You know,
Well,
I just.
yeah. And obviously over a few years that we've known each other, certainly you've had some events that I've really enjoyed.
Thank you.
I guess you, because of how long you've been doing this, who are some of the chefs that you've had the opportunity to work with here around the Washington, D.C. area?
So I worked for a myriad of restaurants, and whether it was all diverse cuisines, Persian and Greek and you name it. And then I went to work for the distributors in the area, wine distributors. And that was interesting. Not a lot of women in the business at that time, you know, so that was a bit of a challenge. And then I had the chance to go work for the Four Seasons Hotel in Washington, D.C. And Chef William Douglas McNeil III, who was a chef at Gleneagles, he was at the helm, and he was very precise. So I was able to come on board and do the purchasing and work on the 1400 bottle wine cellar with him. Every month we would do a tasting and you would see the evolution of these wines, whether they were ready to be on the list. But he was such a brilliant mentor, not only to me, but many Michelin chefs that are around these days. And the knowledge was just incredible. You know, so I would say he was probably one of the most salient influences on what I decided to do. And because I loved the wine facet so much, I then had an opportunity with Matanzas Creek Winery. So Sandra McEver, the daughter of the Sears and Roebuck Scion from New Orleans. That's where she grew up. In fact, Longview Gardens still open to the public. It's fascinating. In 1977, she started Matanzas Creek with her husband, Bill McIver. And the wines, it was pretty magical. Number one, there was a lot of lavender there. I needed calming days after the Four Seasons Hotel, a bit frenetic, needless to say. And there were like over 4,000 plants. What she did was really put something on the map when there weren't so many women winery proprietors. And you had Mary Edwards, who made that winery a name. They've always had great winemakers, Mary and David Ramey. And for 4 years, I had a great opportunity to work for her, see what it was about. The attention to detail was just magnificent. And to cover a cool geography, Manhattan, of course, was like a favorite. And I had really influential people that I dealt with, like Julian Nicolini from the Four Seasons restaurant, not related to the hotel, but the iconic one with the pool room and the grill room. He was brilliant. And Peter Morrell, who had Morrell's Wine Bar. I mean, it was so dynamic, so amazing. And so was the whole geography, because New York wasn't the only place. But 4 years later, I hear that the winery's being sold. So I'm like, what? I'm wearing my Kevlar because everything was allocated and going around making sure people got their allocations. Then I hear Jess Stone Street Jackson's buying Matanzas Creek, Jess of Kendall Jackson. And
Okay.
everyone knows the consistency and acclaim for Kendall Jackson. Different balewic, though, from my Kevlar and eyedropper. So upon meeting him, I have to tell you, he was very upfront, on point individual. He says, "What do you think about all this?" And I'm like, "I don't know. The differences are so vast from my perceived, knowledge." And he says, "Let me tell you what I'm about. I'm about mountains, benchland, and hillside fruit." He says, "I don't necessarily believe in the interior because the vines are in struggling. So you need to have unique geography." And I said, "That's pretty cool." He says, "Great." And he already has all these plans in place. And I guess it all worked out because roughly, let's see, July will be 30 years. So I guess I like it. I love it. The family is incredible, and we're over 40 different wineries global these days. The appreciation of terroir and to see the second generation proprietors come into the fold and their imprint. I mean, it's magical. It's a really unique company.
And these days, of course, sometimes it's hard to find you at home because the job tends to take you around the country and sometimes outside the country. So, I mean, maybe it'd be interesting at given your role, what specifically are you doing as far as how to push or promote the various wines? Because as you say, there are a lot of wines here involved in the Jackson family, and there are wines at various price points as well. I mean, different price points, different styles of wine, and all of that. So, what is it? What kind of activities are you involved in that promotes all these various wines?
Great question. There's a motto of that if you think you sell it, you do. And everybody embraces all the different wineries, over 40 of them. But we have different alignments and people have different focuses, so I have the opportunity to work with the Spire Collection. The Spire Collection are a little bit more niche, high end for the most part, but not necessarily because it's just a meld and different expressions. You can see some of them right here. I think that this one would be a great one to mention. So Stone Street, and I love this as in Jess Stone Street Jackson. There was a Dr. Stone Street who delivered Jess's grandfather. And because of that, they gave tribute to the doctor. And so all the men born into the Jackson family have Stone Street as the middle name. So you have Jess Stone Street Jackson, and you have Christopher Stone Street Jackson, second generation proprietor, and his boys. And it was actually the property where Jess was laid to rest. But it's an amazing mountain, like in the Mayacamas Mountain Range, 2,400 feet elevation. Our winemaker, Christina Scheidler, produces beautiful wines. They do Chardonnay and Cabernet. We have library selections. But it's like a very special property. So I love that. In addition to, I'm sorry, were you going to say
No,
something?
go ahead.
No, okay. So,
I'll wait for a moment.
okay, you don't have to.
Well,
So,
okay. So since you are grabbing a different wine, let me ask this
yes.
question, because you just made a comment about something that some people may not understand. When you say library co collection, what does that mean?
We the family is so smart, and they will cellar like quantities of various vintages. So instead of you having to wait for the evolution and maturation, they've
Yes.
done it for you. And then
Yes.
we release it, just like Stone Street's doing
Yeah.
it these days. And it's so cool to be able to taste a 2015 Cabernet or
Yeah.
something, because the beauty of these wines, they really understand every single facet, whether it's the cooperage, the barrels. The winemakers tend to pick the forest and the staves, and they're experimenting with foudres, like the eggs, the ceramic eggs that you can cellar wines in. So it's pretty unique. And when we first started talking, we were speaking about Château Lasaigue, where I had the opportunity to go in Saint-Émilion, which is now Grand Cru Classé with the upcoming 2022 release. So that's pretty exciting. It takes 10 years to lobby and get that. And you have to have a second property within, which we have Les Cadrans de Lasaigue, which is cool. But the thing that's really cool about Château Lasaigue, and it ties into Verite, which is one of my favorite cheers too, from my recollection. Okay. So we have a family, the Seyon family, that came into the fold, and that was the first wine, the first vintage that was out was 98, but Pierre Seyon had made some prior. And so you have the Seyon family. They grew up in Gascony, and actually down the street from Ariane de Gouin, who started D'Artagnan. Everybody knows that yummy food company. So Pierre came over and just knew about his talent and how brilliant he was, and basically said, can you make me a great Merlot? Maybe something as good as Petrus. And Pierre, because he says, why not better? And so there he goes, right? Okay. And what's so cool is not only did Pierre make these amazing wines, and like there, the first one was a Verite Lamuse, which was a Merlot expression, and the inspiration, and then La Joie, the joy, and then Le Désir, which is my favorite Cabernet Franc, and I love it, climate change resilient. So that was pretty amazing. And now you have the second generation, Hélène Seyon, who's making the Verite with him, Anna Coda, and Nikolai, his son, who is the vigneron and general manager at Château Lasaigue. So, and these are just a couple of the incredible winemakers or the teams that we have on board. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because when you said the word library, I pretty much thought I knew what that was because when we were in Australia last year, you get to this point in life where you say, well, I can't buy a wine and wait 15 years to drink it because of my own age, right?
I hear you.
There are a couple of places we went to in Australia where what they call them museum wines, actually. And so it's the same concept. I mean, they're already wines that have been put down in their own cellars for maybe 10 or 15 years. And so you can buy those, obviously, because they've been storing them. They might be a little higher in price than if they were nice, fresh, and young wines, but still they're great wines. And so they just use a different term, but it's the same concept, right? And it's just different people use a different word for it. But the great part about all of this for people who like wines like that is that somebody else has already done the work of storing it. And actually, the great thing about that is they've stored it at the right temperature, at the right place. So the odds are that when you get it, it's going to be fine.
100%. Library or museum, tough one, but in Australia we have an incredible property, Hickenbothen, that Chris Carpenter, who makes La Coya and Cardinal and La Hoda, he also, and one of the things that I think is so interesting about a lot of the winemakers that we have is they have an understanding of a variety of terroir, not just from one plot in Napa per se, but like Chris, he also deals with Australia. I think it gives them like a greater vision instead of somebody who just deals with one plot, even though that it doesn't mean that you don't. But a lot of the winemakers have worked in Chile and Oregon and you name it, so all over the place.
And so far, the wines you've spoken about are not sparkling.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you that one of the things that was the greatest joy that occurred, I guess like about a year ago, we became the importer of record for Champagne-Henriot. And Champagne-Henriot is just, it's breathtaking. Alice Tétéan is at the helm. She's the cellar master. She's lived her whole life in Champagne. She worked at Krug before she came on to Champagne-Henriot. And I know that you're a bubble devotee as well. And it's all about the bead. You know, sometimes it's too moussey or it's too aggressive. The bead with Champagne-Henriot hits your palate in such fine fashion. I hope I'm not drooling. So it's like, it's
Keep a
so
napkin
incredible.
nearby.
Pardon?
Keep a napkin nearby.
I know, right? It's incredible. She's been invited to be the guest speaker at a host of cool places, whether the Metropolitan Club or wherever.
Okay,
And
yeah.
she's just absolutely riveting and passionate. And as she would say, dynamic. But she really is. She's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
So.
But so it's it. I mean, in this case, I mean, you basically are going around and talking about all these wines you've shown us today, but you do it in different settings. I mean, it can be a restaurant, it can be others. I mean, what are some of the unique settings where you've had a chance to promote these wines?
Well, that's a great question. So I do a lot with various clubs and with Michelin groups. There's a Michelin group out there, Hive Hospitality, and they have restaurants in DC and Florida, and they just opened one called Ox and Olive that's incredible. And they actually have Château Lysée by the glass, which is great. But I do a lot of things with niche, with, as I say, clubs, Michelin restaurants, International Wine and Food Society, and just, get out there and see what's needed and see voids and whatever have you.
So you don't necessarily have a specific territory per se,
The
geographically.
country, the country.
Whole country. Okay. So, and that's why we have trouble trying to coordinate and say, oh, let's get together for whatever it might be. I think one of the more interesting things very recently, though, and for a lot of people, this doesn't maybe hit them naturally. You are on the morning TV show locally here in Washington, D.C., but you were there with somebody from a Japanese food restaurant. And I guess I never thought about having someone like yourself talking about these great wines paired up with somebody from a Japanese restaurant. I mean, can you talk for a moment maybe about what these wines and Japanese food? I mean that, or I mean it could actually be whether it's Japanese food or Chinese food maybe, because that may not be a natural link that we would think about.
Well, I am, as you are, a Japanese and sushi devotee, big time. All right. I just love it. And the more pristine and fresh, the better, because the integral qualities. So I want to thank you, A, for introducing me to Takumi. And it's a group that's growing by leaps and bounds. But what I love about them is they fly their fish in from Japan 4 times a week. So you're getting the freshest of the fresh. And they're not only in Columbia, Maryland, but they're in Navy Yard, they're in Bethesda, and now they're opening Pentagon City. They're like all over the place, and they're incredible. And it's the pristine, fresh quality, the savory elements with the sauces that they use, or you don't even need any sauce. You just need to pair the right wine. And these wines have such a vast difference in flavor profiles. And as long as the acid is right and the amount of tannins and whatever have you, pairing's divine. Like Onryo with a little bit of Ika sashimi. No, it's just they're wonderful, and they really have a great concept as to which wines will meld. And what we had done was it was an expression of pre-Preakness culinary and wine pairings, and they knew exactly what to pair, and so it wasn't me trying to convince them. They have an innate knowledge as to what melds perfectly.
It was very interesting from that perspective because I guess normally when I have Japanese food, I don't really think about opening a bottle of wine. Not
Talking.
really. For some reason, it just doesn't hit me that way. Sake maybe or sake wine. Just the everyday kinds of wines I would have here, I just don't think about. So that's what made that interesting. I will say that one of the another interesting facet was a show we had seen that it was a British-based show, and they were talking about wine in China, and somebody pointed out that you for them they should talk about how the wine hits the palate in the context of talking about tea, because the Chinese understand tea, but when we talk about wine and it's got this kind of a flavor, that kind of a nose, the Chinese may not somehow equate it with the terms that we as Americans or Europeans use with wine. So they actually took the wine experts to a tea specialist and use terminology that they understand from the tea industry to describe your wine. And that was rather interesting to watch that segment because we'd never thought about that. And it's just the way that we think about food and what we drink with food. So it's
It
rather
makes
interesting.
sense. You think about some teas leave a tannic, like very matte kind of flat thing, and then some of them have like a green tea that might have a lot of floral, notes to it, a little lily even. That makes a lot of sense. I can see the synergy,
So one other place I want to take you to for a few minutes of discussion is you may recall a couple of years ago we did that wine tasting dinner and you did the sensory thing where we had a piece of paper with all these different wines and it's all about how to taste a wine or how to let it just kind of rest on the palate. Maybe you can spend a moment talking about what that is, the whole sensory approach to tasting wine with food.
I think that oftentimes somebody might not realize, like, I like that or I don't like that and why. And then to like put down the descriptors. What do you smell? Do you have lilacs or lilies or cedar? And then when you taste it, is it kind of creamy or oily? Is it flat or matte? And there's like an epiphany that ensues when people are like, yeah, that's what I'm tasting, and that's why I like it, or that's why I don't like it. And it helps like hone the mind when you taste something to be like, all right, that's going to fit. And also to describe to the sommelier, I like something that's kind of round and creamy, or I like something that's very dry. And then you also have to understand, like, how fatty is it? And the fattier it is, the higher your tannins should be, so it mitigates and melds properly.
We thought that one of the things that was on that array in front of us that particular evening, we have potato chips, for example, because of the saltiness of a potato chip. And you go, well, most people aren't going to think about drinking wine with potato chips in front of them. But if you have the right wine, it can work.
And the caviar dollop, let's not
Well,
forget that. I don't
obviously.
think we had it for that tasting, unfortunately, but you always need that.
But I thought that it's not just a technical but a fun way to have people get more into wines and different things. And you probably remember Michael Flynn from Kincaid's years ago.
He was
He was a
wonderful.
lawyer, down in Texas these days. And I remember being at a dinner at Kincaid's one evening, and it was actually for dessert. And I had a chocolate-based dessert. My wife has apple-based, and he sends up two glasses dessert wine, and they paired perfectly with our desserts. However,
Separate, different ones, right?
different ones, right? And then when we switched them, I couldn't stand the wine because it just her apple and dessert wine that paired perfectly. Her wine did not pair at all with the chocolate and vice versa. And it really shows the difference of knowing what's in the food, but also what's in that wine and how they work together or they don't work together. It really does go to the whole sensory thing that you presented when we did the wine tasting a couple of years ago about letting that wine kind of rest on your palate so you can really get a full understanding what it's doing or what it tastes like. And I go back to a winery we were at. I can't remember if it was New Zealand or Australia. My initial taste was I thought it was sweet. And we came back to it maybe 20 minutes later. And the guy who was pouring said, now, before you just drink it, he said, try it again, let it just. And eventually I came around to thinking, Actually, it wasn't as sweet as I originally thought if I really concentrated on the
Get the
taste
right
of the
thing.
salad. Yeah. And actually there was no food at all, but it was just letting it, go around, and that's why, you have to let the you don't just swallow wine to me. It's I know a friend, I always say every time I watch him take a little sip of wine, I say he chews the wine. Because he,
Oh,
yeah, that's the way I look at it. When I watch him
well.
drink wine, it's more like he's chewing it as opposed to drinking it, And but he's trying to get the full experience of the wine in his on his palate. So it's really interesting.
That's very cool that he does it. I don't think I'm patient enough to chew it. I'll swirl it, you know? No, that's
Well, this
cool.
is the guy, you were saying that when you started out the cellar, 1,400 bottles in the cellar. And this is someone that has just his own cellar is 4,000 bottles, so he's got a few,
Wow.
yeah,
Oh.
maybe a few less now. But
Stay
when
good
that,
friends with him. He needs help, you
well,
know?
unfortunately, he lives in Florida, so we can't go and help him with his cellar as often as we'd like. But he's generous when we've been around him that he's more than happy to share. So it's a fun
Sweet.
thing. I mean, it's but here's the other part about what you've got is you've got a portfolio of wines that are, at different price points. And I'm thinking also about a great rosé that you introduced us to, and of course, Synth, which is, but it's an interesting to me anyway, one of the more interesting rosé wines I think I've ever tasted. It's just nice and fresh. And now that we're coming into warm weather season, do you have something you can easily grab that's for summer heat and whatever?
So that's a great question. I would have to say that champagne, okay, champagne, and one moment.
By the
Okay,
way,
nothing fell.
yeah.
So another favorite of mine is Hartford. So Hartford Family Wines, and they do a Russian River Chardonnay, which is so brilliant and bright. The acid is lovely, and it's not too acidic. It's not that old world-esque, but it's round enough, it's light, it's bright, it's yeah, it's a very popular wine, and I love it. Yeah.
Well, I think you're right about one thing. The champagne, a little bit of bubbles, that's never going to go wrong with at any point in time, right? Whether it's hot or cold or whatever it is. So yeah, that tends to answer the question about mood any time of day, night, whatever, and whatever the weather is and whatever's
Always.
going on. So
Always.
yeah. So are there any new things coming up with the wines that you're representing, or right now things are somewhat stable industry-wise?
You know what? I think there's like always business, you know, there's, and the way I look at it, when the traffic is bad, the business is good. There's so many celebratory things that are coming, especially like in DC with the 250th anniversary, and you have like, right? There's all, like, I'm thinking definitely Uber. I'm not driving down there, you know? So there's, yeah, there's a lot of great things. And I think that there's always a cyclical element in the business, you know, because if people say, oh, business is there. Is your product great? You know, are you targeting the right place? And, you know, I think that people will always appreciate great wine. And I just see a lot of clamor for it and a lot of appreciation. And we have new projects coming into the fold, which are very exciting at Jackson. There's a new sparkling coming out. Banky is the name, and it's after Barbara Banky Jackson, who's married to Jess. And Barbara is brilliant. She's actually the chairman of the Breeders' Cup, because not only did we do wines, but Jess had decided to go into horse racing. Curlin, Rachel Alexandra, you know, Derby winners, and so actual Preakness and Belmont. So a lot of exciting things there. We're now like in the bourbon business because second generation proprietor Christopher Stone Street Jackson decided to start this bourbon, which is amazing. And we always have something new coming on board, which is really special. Cambria has a new wine, and you know, we have so many projects, it's like keeping up with it all. And that's why we have a great team that goes out and talks about them and taste people on them.
So you're not you don't necessarily, I guess, see there a market issue with people drinking less wine or whatever, because there are always things in the media that you can read about what's going on with the volume that's being purchased by people, the wine business going up, down, and the impact, of course, of climate change and how that's impacting things and so on. I don't know how, what do you see going on there?
I don't see an issue because, like, all right, you can go for RTDs or you can go for, like, non-alcoholic, and that's fine. All right. But, it's not like it's supposed to be a chugging contest or something. It's supposed to elevate that dining experience or your life or alleviate, a meeting that you had that you didn't like. You know what I mean? It should be something to make your life happy. And I think, especially when you have maybe a younger generation come into the fold, don't be talk, well, it was harvested at these bricks, and yeah, nobody cares. It has nuances of this flavor, and if you integrate it with this kind of pairing, you're gonna have such a wonderful, your palate's gonna thank you, you know?
No, that's
So, glass half full, and for me, I prefer it to be overflowing. But if you are like, well, nobody's drinking, then maybe nobody is because you're not exuding positivity, you know?
Well, we made sure that we've kept our supply stocked here so that we don't run out.
Right?
And
We're doing
so
our part.
that, well, we're trying, we're doing the best we can, right? So what's anything, well, I know that you must be around for at least the next few days in town, so we'll have to get together and somehow drink a bottle or two or three or whatever.
At Takumi, I need some
There we
sushi.
go. There we go. So I don't know, maybe I'll ask Hope to come back in if she's got a question she wants to throw out, and see if there's something she wants to ask you, since she's also involved with some of the wine stuff through some of her other activities.
Yeah, at least this is so much fun. I love how you're
Thank
just
you.
so thoughtful and educated and experienced. It really explains to us what it means to have this quality of wine in your life. It's
You're so
wonderful.
kind. Well, I need to make sure that you can concur with flavor profiles, so I need to see you soon.
Okay, that worked
Oh,
for
that
me.
sounds
Yes. And I
great.
was telling Tim that during the pandemic with my dear friend Jim Morris, I started the Women Who Make Us Wine show. So you will be in that episode, the new season. And I'm looking for someone to celebrate that with me and do that show together. So we'll talk offline.
All
I
right. love Sure, go. Yeah, absolutely.
it.
Yeah.
We're in. All right. Well, thank you both. Tim Trainer, I love your show. Tim's Travails. We are live on June with episode 14, starring Elise Kudo, Vice President of Aspire Collection of the Jackson Family Wines on Incandescent Radio, Incandescent TV, Spotify, Apple, and iHeartRadio. So check us out and check out all of Tim's episodes and his wonderful books. He has book number three coming out, which we will have to do an entire episode about that. So the China Factor, the China Connection, it's just wonderful stuff. So we'll see you all next month. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Elise.
Thank
And thank
you.
you to our audience.
Thank
Thank
you
you.
so much. I appreciate
Yeah.
it. An honor to be on here. I appreciate
Yes.
it.
Cheers.
Please.
We need
Thank you.
glasses. We'll meet in
All
person. All
right. Take
right.
care.
Thank you,
Thank
guys.
you.